Ain't it just like a friend of mine to hit me from behind? Yes, I'm going to Carolina in my Honda.
Oh, wow.
Reunited, and it feels okay.
It's all right, I guess.
It's all right.
Yeah.
I don't hate it.
It's easier for me.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, a lot easier for you on the technical end of things.
Yeah.
A lot better on the sound quality.
You know, I guess it's okay.
For both of us, anyway.
For both of us, yeah.
Yeah, you sounded fine. I sound like I was talking through a tin can. Yeah.
Like warbled.
Yeah, I was warbial.
Warbial.
I'm back for the summer Canes Weekly podcast. We got to kick around, get a new name, because we have not been weekly since the Toronto Maple Leafs were playing.
Yeah, and we haven't really been that Canes-centric, really, at this point, because
well,
it's the playoffs.
Not a whole lot, you know, of Canes action going on, but we are going to have a little bit coming up this show just about the draft party that we're going to hook up with Patrick Clark, and Patrick's organizing it, and we're going to talk a little bit about that on this show. So Patrick will hop on and tell you where the unofficial draft party will be, because the Hurricanes are going to organize their own, and if you were at last year's, then you know that you want to come to this one. He was kicking around, if you're listening to this show, chances are you follow him on Twitter already and that you were part of this discussion, but he was kicking around on Twitter and a Google Docs polling people on a location, so he settled on one. A lot of Canes Twitter is going to be at this. Section 328 is going to be at the draft because that's been their thing, mm-hmm. but a lot of us in Canes Twitter talk will be there. Eastern Conference Finals, Game 6 tonight. James, here's something that Yahoo NHL just tweeted out. A shot attempts differential in the playoffs. Just some. Hawks are a plus 71. Ducks are a plus 37. Rangers are a minus 6. Bolts are a minus 47.
Wow. See, with the way the Eastern Conference Final has gone, I would have figured it would be both would be very much in the plus. The Rangers have been completely outpossessed for huge chunks of it. I mean, even in that 5-1 win, dude, Tampa dictated the pace of that game, you know? Yeah, the Rangers have been piss-poor possessionally, to put it bluntly. And I'm somewhat emotionally invested in this, as if any of you listen to this podcast, that's you probably know that by now. And needlessly so. This is why sports are stupid, because, you know, you care about it, get emotionally invested, but when they lose, it's just a game. It's just a game, whatever. But when they win, if the Rangers eke out a Game 6 win tonight, I'm going to be so stoked. If they lose, I'm just going to shrug it off and pretend it never happened.
I really want both of these to go 7, which, yeah, whoa, Mason, really? You want a Game 7? But what I like the scheduling. For these conference finals, we're going to have a Friday and a Saturday Game 7s, if necessary. I like that. I'm fine with that. Some weekend Game 7 hockey here in your wheelhouse. Yeah, I can dig it.
Yeah.
I can dig it. It certainly feels like Anaheim-Chicago's going 7, right?
Oh, my God, especially after the game last night. That was so close. I mean, can we talk about Frederik Andersen's softies? Letting that Teravainen goal was bad, but that Taves tying goal in the last minute, shot from the goal line and just kind of squibs between, I don't know if it's between his leg or snuck in between his leg and the post, but
he was good enough.
Enough. I mean, honestly, the Chicago team is still something special. I mean, they can't keep Freddie Anderson can't keep letting in goals like that, and they expect to advance past.
But Chicago can't let 3 goals in before they register a shot on goal on Anderson, though. That's, you know, Quenneville says today that we just didn't start on time, and that's kind of a light way of putting it, I think.
Well, I don't know. I mean, they didn't start on time, but on the other hand, I mean, Crawford has got to give you a bit of a save there. I mean, I saw the idea floated out earlier today in Twitter land that, you know, in the offseason, regardless of what happens, just to get out of salary cap, you know, the salary cap purgatory that they're in right now, you got to look at moving a guy like Crawford. I mean, yeah, you know.
Don't you think it's going to be sharp? What's that, $5 million that's going to come off right there?
Yeah.
Don't you think? I mean.
Yeah, but with what Corey Crawford brings, I mean, he's been good enough on a very good team, you know. His stock has never been that high to me. He's shown at the right moments, but, you know, especially after the performance in this series, I'd really debate how much utility they're really going to derive out of keeping him.
What, are they going after Craig Anderson?
Hey, you never
hometown
know.
Hometown boy.
Bring the, bring.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, he is. I mean, bring back the magic of that Colorado Avalanche series he had, you know.
That's right.
Throwing up whatever obnoxious save percentage he had.
Well, both him and Leonard are, you know, getting calls. Brian Murray spoke with Bruce Garrios of the Ottawa Sun yesterday and mentioned that both of his goaltenders are receiving interest from other teams. you figure they lock up Hammond and they're going to keep one of the other two. And if you're someone like Chicago, I don't know if you make that move, but San Jose, Edmonton, Buffalo, one of those guys is headed there, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I could see it. I mean, you don't have to speculate ahead of the ball game here. I mean, considering we're still in the, you know, Western Conference or conference finals of the playoffs at this point, but you know, it's very much a realistic thing that there's going to be some goalie shuffling going on. Especially, I mean, I really do think, I mean, Chicago is going to does have some cap issues, and I'd be more likely where I stand Bowman, and I'm not. That's why, you know, I'm just, you know, living in mediocrity as a college student. I think I'd be more apt to move Corey Crawford rather than Patrick Sharp. I'd be very hesitant to move one of your leading scorers and a guy that complements, you know, your top-end players so well. I mean, yeah, $5 million is a lot, but is Corey Crawford really bringing you that much? And especially after last night's performance, you know, I'm not so sure you can really hang with Anaheim at this point. It's going to go 7, I think, but Anaheim is outright dominated. Freddie Anderson ups his game. Corey Crawford won't be able to keep pace. That's a big if, though.
I haven't really heard anyone except you right now suggest that they'd rather Sharp than Crawford in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, that's completely not bound by any fact, but just merely my opinion. I mean, I've never been sold on Corey Crawford. I'll be the first one to admit it. Same way I've always been on the trade Cam Ward bandwagon. I've been on the Hawks could be fine without Crawford.
Even after 2013? Because that cup was him.
I don't totally buy that 100%. I think that was still an extremely deep team.
It was.
I mean, like I said, yeah, Crawford has his moments and he can shine at points, but I don't think they would be a whole lot worse off without him. And I think they would free themselves up from some cap issues. You know, I mean, they played pretty well, especially in the first, you know, against Nashville with Scott Darling in it. I'm not suggesting Scott Darling should be their starter, but Scott Darling has played extremely well for them at times. And they have guys waiting in the wings. I mean, not only that, you know, Sharp is more easily replaceable with the emergence of Teravainen. And I think that's the reason why that's the big thing. You know, freeing $5 million and putting Teravainen in his slot.
In the playoffs, Corey Crawford, 2012. Well, let's go all the way back. So in playoffs, when he's played at least 6 games, because he played one game, he appeared in one game in 08-09 when they went to the Western Conference Finals, lost to the Detroit Red Wings. The first season they won the Cup, he started 7 games, posted a .927 save percentage. 2010-2011, the year Boston won it. 2011-2012, he started 6 games at an .893. Not that great in relief of Antti Niemi then. Was that Niemi that year? 11-12, or was he already in San Jose? Anyway, 12-13, they win the Cup. 23 games started. 16 wins, of course. A .932 save percentage, a .184 goals against average. Since then, a .912 last year and a .917 so far this year.
So, in my mind,
slightly above average.
It's slightly above average, yeah. Okay, so the Cup year you look at, see they were stacked. And interestingly enough, the thing you got to really look at is, okay, low goals against average, you know, high save percentage. Where were those shots coming from? That's a pretty dominant defensive team that year, was it not? I mean, not obviously that wasn't purely their style, but they had the defensive that keep the shots to the outside really effectively. And Crawford had to make some good saves and keep them in the game. But he wasn't the star of that run. You know, he had a very good stretch. But like I said, you know, much like in the way, you can't even put these guys in the same echelon. People are already on Jonathan Quick as being just mediocre at points and running hot streaks. Can't you say the same thing about Corey Crawford?
I don't know. I'm just not as hard on him as you are. I'm looking at quality start percentage here now on Hockey Reference, developed by Rob Volman. He's got a 60.6 quality start percentage throughout his entire playoff career, a 54.5 this year, a quality start being when the goalie achieves at least the mean save percentage in a game. So the average save percentage 2013-2014 was 91.5. So if you in a game stop 26 of 28, that's a 92.9, then that's a quality start. So he's got a quality start percentage of over 60%, just over 54 so far this year. Would you really be surprised if he stole 6 and 7 here?
Well, he could. I mean, at this point, obviously, you have an unproven goaltender for Anaheim and Freddie Anderson. I mean,
you have
he's obviously
unproven goaltenders.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Anaheim also doesn't have anywhere else to turn. I mean, you can't, what are you going to do, put John Gibson in goal? Yeah.
No, there's, I mean, from here on out, no matter who wins these series, there's one goaltender for team.
Yeah.
From here on, I mean, you have between 1 and 9 games left, depending on who you are.
Mm-hmm.
You're going one goaltender.
Yeah, it's true. That said, I mean, you know, obviously Freddie Anderson is going to be in goal. So just by nature, Chicago has a goaltending advantage. So, yeah, very much. He could be the difference. But do I think he's going, you know, is he the guy that you expect your goaltender to be if you, you know, laud him with all these accolades? It's like this great goaltender, the guy your team can really count on in like a very serious, concrete manner, not just merely a pomp sort of fluffing it up for the media kind of thing. I'd never thought that of him. I could be wrong. Maybe this is, you know, the end of the series and the Stanley Cup final. He proves me wrong and I look like a jackass. But I just don't see that. I just don't see that in him. I could see him going before Sharp, and I think it would make more sense. I think he would be more tentative about move. I mean, look how easily everybody after Chicago won their first cup. Whoops. Antti Niemi. Everybody saw him as this clutch goaltender that had such great success in Chicago, and within 2 years, he had fallen from grace, and they moved him off. Corey Crawford emerged. With his precedent set, I mean, wouldn't he be just by nature somewhat replaceable?
I don't think so. Wow. I think he's slightly above replaceability, because unlike Niemi, it wasn't just 1 or 2 years. I think he's developed a steady, proven ability to be the number one goaltender behind what obviously is a really good team, but still, you know, he's who you need. And he's, rest in peace, Capgeek. I should have this in front of me, but I think he's at pretty cost controlled. The extension was for a few years, so what's he at, 6, 5 million?
It's something in that realm.
But he's, so like that, yeah, it's a bit high, but you have him for how many more years? I don't know. I like it. And then the other side of things, Tampa Bay, New York. Hank's got to steal one tonight, right?
He's got to steal a couple. I mean, honestly, you know, the one thing I've learned about the New York Rangers, don't ever count them out. They've come back from enough deficits, it's not even funny. And Henrik Lundqvist, he's already, after the Washington series, there was a lot of, you know, immediate aftermath of, this could be one of the most clutch goaltenders of our era. I don't think you can say that until Henrik Lundqvist has a Stanley Cup ring. And I think he won't be looked on in the long run until that happens. This, if he steals Game 6 and subsequently Game 7, that reputation solidified. That is very much his legacy if that's what happens here. Because the Rangers have been outplayed, but you know, for a large degree of this series, up and down the lineup. The Rangers have not been able to hide Keith Yandle. They haven't been able to hide Brian Boyle. Or not Brian, Dan Boyle. Wow, Jesus, too many Boyles in this series.
Too many Boyles.
Don't sing that.
Too many Boyles.
Is this going to be like Too Many Cooks?
That's the joke. Thank you.
The joke was?
The joke has been found.
Well, there was no melody in that. You got to work on your musicality there. That said.
Hang on. I'm sorry. I just have to wipe this egg off my face before we continue. So are you nervous tonight then as a Rangers fan?
Yeah. Well, look. Just
are you going to pull a Braden Coburn? Is that how nauseous you're feeling?
No. I'm going to be watching this game not expecting a lot. You know, Tampa has a chance to lock it up at home. And we know statistically, the teams that win Game 5 tend to move on. It's just the way, it's something, some ridiculous percentage. It's over 75%. I think it might be 80 close to. So I'm not expecting a lot. The X factor for me is always going to be Henrik Lundqvist, whose elimination game numbers we all know now are absurd. But they really need a big game from one Martin Saint-Louis, who actually, I think, looked very good at points in Game 5.
Pulled himself up off the fourth line.
He did. And yeah, he had a couple in the first period. The Rangers actually dominated play for the most part. They had a great start, and they could not convert on the power play.
He's looked better than his counterpart, Ryan Callahan, that's for sure.
He has. And there were points, and like I said, he has legs back. Game 5, there were a couple points. He beat, I remember him beating Hedman to the outside pretty badly and got a good shot on goal. I mean, Bishop stood tall, so give that credit to him. You know, the thing that's killed the Rangers is they've had all the wind sucked out of the sails on the power play. You know, two back-to-back excellent kills by Tampa. And that from then on out, Tampa controlled the pace of the game. You know, it was 0-0. They had their chance. The New York Rangers had their chance to put up a couple of goals, and they just absolutely got no pressure, no shots. If I Definitely no shots on the first power play, and I'm pretty sure none on the second.
It was really bad. I mean, they couldn't even get an entry on a couple of them.
It was terrible.
Yeah.
And that's something they got to work on. They've had trouble. Their big guys aren't clicking, and you can't rely. Derek Brassard's been a revelation at points in this playoff run, but I'm sorry, you can't rely on Kevin Hayes and Derek Brassard to be your offensive catalysts.
And on the other end of things, you know, that tic-tac-toe goal they had, the Bolts had on their power play, was emblematic of a really poor penalty kill structure. And, I mean, when you lose the special teams game, you're going to lose the hockey game.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's... I really should have these numbers in front of me, but I feel like there's a sort of an idea, a narrative of playoff games not being called very strictly. And there's the idea that you're not going to get a whole lot of power play opportunities in a playoff game. But I think it was Stephen Birch that looked at this, but there have been more power play opportunities in each of the last five playoffs than each of the last five regular seasons per team per game. And so you're going to get your opportunities, and you're going to get your chances, and if you can't kill penalties, you can't click on your power play, you're going to go home.
Yeah. And that's the big thing. I mean, we've seen teams in the past few playoff years get by. They've maybe had a crappy power play but have gotten by on an excellent penalty kill, or, you know, vice versa. It's easier obviously to get by if you have a better penalty kill than anything else. The Rangers have not had a good either at this point. It's definitely not in this series. I mean, Tampa's power play is lethal. I mean, because if you're not covering Stamkos, you have a bunch of other super talented players. I mean, the triplets are just a power play unit by themselves, essentially. When they're on the ice, the puck is in the Rangers zone, and they're cycling it, and Rangers cannot get out, especially when they have a shitty matchup. You know, I'm expecting Tampa with home ice advantage, get them out there every time Boyle and Yandle are on the ice. You know, because they can't, I mean, Yandle and Boyle are both great skaters, but boy, don't you think the Rangers are starting to look a little bit old out there in this series?
A little bit.
You know, I mean, they've got some guys with some legs, but Dan Boyle has just not had it with him. I mean, he's taken a couple rough hits to the head in this playoff run, so yeah, you can maybe point to that. Simply put, they got to be better. I mean, Tampa, I not noticed Schuster and Carl have been abjectly terrible as they have been. They've been either better or the Rangers have just been bad offensively. I want to say, I think maybe they've elevated their games a little bit to just being okay, you know, but the Rangers need to exploit that. Maybe they'll eke one out, but if it is, it's going to be on the shoulders of Henrik Lundqvist.
Of players remaining in the postseason, who would you say has the most career power play goals in the Stanley Cup playoffs?
Of the players remaining?
Of all players remaining in both conferences.
Ooh. Is it Martin Saint-Louis?
Martin Saint-Louis has 13 career power play goals in the postseason. He ranks 89th, tied for something, but 89th in all-time playoff power play goals leaders. He is behind someone who has 15.
Ooh, jeez.
Tied with Patrick Sharp. He's tied with Brad Richards at 13.
My other one was going to be Brad Richards.
Mm-hmm.
Is it an Anaheim Duck?
It is not. He might be playing the Anaheim Ducks.
Oh.
Maybe he had a really good night last night. Maybe he had one goal that was a little lucky, and he shouldn't get a whole lot of credit for it. But Jonathan Toews leads all active players in career power play goals in the postseason. Now, part of that is because Chicago's just played all of the playoff games in the last 5 years. But you wouldn't think.
I would not have thought that. Honestly, I would. Like I said, my guesses were Saint-Louis or Richards. Just because of career length.
Now, obviously, Jágr is first in all active players, that whether or not they're playing in the playoffs right now. He's 24 power play goals, ranks 16th all time. Who would you say is behind Jágr?
Is behind Jágr?
Of all active players.
Oh, man.
Power play goals scored in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Jeez. It's a lot of...
This player has played 147 games of Stanley Cup playoff hockey. He scored 60 times.
See, my
21 of them have been with the man advantage.
The immediate thing I would have jumped to would be a Detroit Red Wing, but
Henrik Zetterberg is tied with this man at 21. Oh, wow. Oh, so is Danielle Briere and Patrick Elias.
Okay, so this is starting to get a little bit of a convoluted
question.
There
are three of the four. Yeah, Patrick Marleau.
Okay,
147 games played in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Patrick Elias 162. Danielle Briere just 124.
Wow. Would not have guessed that.
All time is Brett Hull.
That one I feel pretty comfortable.
How about this, though? Brett Hull, 38 power play goals in 202 games of Stanley Cup playoff hockey. Mike Bossy, 35 in just 129. 85 goals in 129 playoff games for Mike Bossy.
We're also talking about one of the guys here that's almost unilaterally considered, if not one of the greatest.
He's the greatest goal scorer of all time. And he also played in an era where you're not allowed to play goal.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So, you know, we'll keep that in mind. But still, that's an impressive statistic. That's a terrifyingly large number in a small amount, relatively small amount of games when you're talking about a career of a guy that had a number of Stanley Cup rings. Let's count them. One, two, three,
four.
Yeah.
Four. Drafted 15th overall in 1977.
Man.
Pretty good pick. Three teams remaining of these four do not have a first-round selection in Florida coming up on June 26th. Anaheim being the only team remaining that has not dealt their first-round selection. The Carolina Hurricanes draft 5th overall. I feel like they're going to just take whoever's available. If I'm Ron Francis, I would like it. It's an easy move. You can't get any criticism because you're going to have to take one of Hanifin, Marner, or Strome. Patrick Clark is going to jump on, though, and talk a little bit about where we're going to watch Carolina Hurricanes make their 5th overall selection. Joining us today on the reunion show is Patrick Clark. He's got his own show. I think he's still in transition, Pat. What are your plans for your show?
Picking it back up sometime this summer. Apparently, having two kids in one household doesn't lend itself to podcasting too often late at night. So I'm going to figure it out sometime after, probably after the draft, leading into, you know, training camp next year.
Right after the draft, Patrick, a bunch of us went to the Hurricanes. James and I went to the Hurricanes draft party last year. James, where was that? Was it Buffalo Brothers,
Buffalo Brothers. Off of, like,
it was
Boone.
Packed, man. Holy crap. Like, you couldn't sit down anywhere. You couldn't move anywhere. It was just a joke. And, you know, it was nice to see, you know, Forsland was there, Wallin was there. It was fun, but it was just a little crowded. And so, Patrick, you're commandeering a little project here. Tell us about what we're doing this draft.
So, as a matter of fact, I was at the same draft party as you guys, and there would have been zero opportunity to run into you. I think I got there around 5 o'clock, sat up at the bar, and I was like landlocked for 4 hours. So this year I decided, kind of put a call out there, see if there were people that would be interested in an alternate party space, and got a pretty good response. So I've gone ahead and reserved a private area at the Carolina Ale House downtown Raleigh location for 6 p.m. on June 26th, and I'm kind of have an open invite for the first 40 people that want to sign up.
So how do we sign up, Patrick?
Best way to do it is to go on my Twitter feed right now. That's at Patrick Clark, C-L-A-R-K-E, and there's a link to the sign-up form. And eventually I'll get that on a more friendly URL on clarkhockey.com.
You're pretty nifty with software and stuff. I mean, like the Slack chat that we had at the deadline, and you got a Google Docs here for the draft party. You're pretty nifty with this. You're a lot better than I think the rest of us in Kane's Talkland.
Well, it helps when 99% of all the stuff that I do online is my day job, so I'm pretty well versed in it.
Sounds like that was what Mason was digging at there. Like, where's the software expertise come from? All this computer technology.
When you go to college, hate your major, want to go into newspapers and learn that that's a failing plan, you know, you just pick up something else. So websites and web technologies was the next best bet.
All right, beautiful. Patrick, we're going to do the draft party at the Carolina Ale House downtown June 26th with the 5th overall selection. James and I were talking about this. You can't miss it because you're going to take one of Marner, Hanifin, or Strome, and your decision's made for you. Do you want to be Ron Francis at this draft where you can't make a mistake, or would you rather have a little bit more creativity?
I don't think the creativity will really come into it until day of the draft. I think Arizona holds all the cards here, and they're going to dictate what Carolina does. I think Toronto is going to select one of two players, probably Marner or Hanifin, depending upon who Arizona takes. I think I want the pick right now. I think I would be happy with all three players. The only question is, does Ron Francis want a player that can jump in the lineup this year or, you know, one or two seasons from now? Because I think that'll determine whether or not they move back in the draft. Because I think of the three guys, Strom is the most likely, despite leading the OHL in scoring, to need another year of seasoning.
You didn't like what you saw from him at 1C when McDavid hurt his hand?
Liked what I saw, but I think during the OHL playoffs, he was a little stale from the few games that I could see in the highlights. Not to mention, he's still a big guy growing into his body. You know, Marner, his physical stature, and Hanifin's physical stature, I think they're a little more set. They're a little more solid. Strom, I just think give him that extra year, kind of give him the Jonathan Drouin treatment, and I think he'd be just fine.
Well, they're not pushing to contend for a playoff spot next year, so I think that they can afford that. Patrick Clark, you can follow him on Twitter, at Patrick Clark. Clark is with an E, and he'll be organizing the June 26th draft party at the Carolina Ale House downtown. Patrick, thanks for hopping on and talking a little bit to us today.
Not a problem, Mason. James.
All right, we'll see you soon, buddy.
All right, take care.
Thanks, Patrick.
Thanks once again to Patrick Clark for organizing this, for getting it all together, because, I mean, this is way better than a last-minute group text shot out the day before the draft.
Yeah.
Which is absolutely what I would do.
Yep.
He stepped up. He's leading. He's a great captain. James, in the break there, you found something.
The Bolesky thing?
No. You found something that someone said.
Oh,
someone smart said a thing.
Someone smart did say a thing.
And it's kind of a thing that you said.
So I just was bumbling around on the internets. Hey, remember that time about 20 minutes ago, if that, I said how much I dislike Corey Crawford? A certain smart guy and nerd, as you know, those in the hockey know. He's never played the game.
What can he possibly know, James?
Nerd.
He's never played the game.
You're just undermining my argument. That's what you're trying to do. James Myrtle today wrote, headline, Dealing Bickle, Crawford, emphasize, is Blackhawk's best path out of
salary cap. Does he even watch the games?
See? Somebody else that is smart supports me, or at least I support his argument, whatever. He's the smart guy, I'm the dumb guy. You know? I'm not the only one.
It's a shame, because he was so smart up until this one article. All of his columns were such beacons in the mire of Toronto media. Now he's just one of them. Too bad he's wrong.
I'm pretty confident in this. It's added extra layer of confidence to my opinions that I usually don't have.
So his point on Bickle, though, Bickle wrote an 18.4 shooting percentage in 2013. He was 27 years old, had played little more than 200 regular season games to that point, 4 years, $16 million as a reward.
Yeah.
So when the Ducks win the Cup and Matt Bolesky gets $5 million a year from Edmonton, Winnipeg, Philly, who's it going to be? That's going to be as big a mistake, eh?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm not sold on Matt Bolesky. I mean, this is a classic to me. Like, playoff, you know, hot streak, like unsustainable shooting, high like shooting percentage.
Well, he had that in the regular season too.
He did, and that's the kind of thing that makes you take pause, because statistically, that's a pretty decent sample size. I mean, guys tend to not, you know, I mean, league average shooting percentage is like what, 8%, 9% ish in that ballpark.
About 9, because if you know, average save percentage is 91.
Yeah, true. So you know, if you're going the PDO route in terms of how you're calculating this.
No, you can't save it if it's not a shot. And if it's a shot, then that's the shot percentage. So.
Oh, yeah. Duh, you're right. Yeah, that said, I mean, it's going to regress at some point, because Matt Bolesky is obviously...
He shot 15.2 this year.
Yeah,
he's a career 9.9.
It's not going to happen. So that said, I mean, and I wonder, do you have his shooting percentage for the playoffs in front of you?
16.2.
Yeah, that's... it's not going to happen. It's not going to keep happening like that. Matt Pulleski is a very useful player. Very useful player. Fills out, you know, third line, second line at points. But
his 2014-15 season, this is per Steven Birch, gives him comparables like 2013-14 Rick Nash, 2010-11 Alex Semin. Sorry if I hit a nerve there, folks. 2013-2014 and 14-15 Max Pacioretty.
And I don't buy that.
Those are his comparables from this year.
And there's just no way.
You want to hear who his comparables were from his previous season?
Yeah, go for it.
Jordan Tutu, Jesse Winchester, Kyle Brodziak.
And I just do not believe that he took that jump just like that. I mean, we know statistically it's unsustainable. And we know he's playing in a system that probably favors him getting teed up. A la, you know, oh, wow. Everybody gravitated to Ryan Getzlaff on the power play. And I'm just sitting here at the far
point. Well, his OT winner last night was just a tap and birdie.
Yeah. It was kind of garbage. Garbage goal. But, you know, somebody is going to throw him money. Let's be real here. The other one I had said was it reminded me of Joel Ward after he had that great run with Nashville. He turned out to be a very useful player for Washington, but they threw a lot of money.
So who does it for Pulleski?
I think Edmonton is very much a possibility. I mean, you threw it out there, and you very much could be right. I could see him going east as well, too. I mean, oh, man.
Boston?
When the New York Rangers don't re-sign Martin Saint-Louis.
Oh, God, no. It's not going to be that.
It could be that. But, yeah, very much it could be Boston. I mean, any team that's going through some kind of upheaval right now, I wouldn't be surprised. You know, maybe the Flyers.
Colorado?
Yeah, I think Colorado's going to be looking more on their defense, though. You know, they've had a lot of issues there, and they don't have a lot of pieces. I mean, up front, they've got just an insane amount of talent. Even their bottom six are filling out pretty half decently. You know, the Parento for Briere trade aside, we're just going to pretend that didn't happen. You know, they need help on defense. I don't know if Pulleski gives them that, and I don't know if that's going to be their first priority. But, yeah, I could see him going east to say, you know.
Montreal. There it is. Montreal. Think? They want the big body. They got, yeah, he's. Nope, that's it. Solved it. So that now we know where Matt Pulleski's going. we can. What do you want? Close the show, eh? Get off here a little early, and then we'll get to watching this game tonight. Game 6 tonight. Game 6, Anaheim, Chicago tomorrow.
I think so.
Do they have a travel?
Yeah.
I think it's tomorrow. But then Friday, Saturday, the game's sevens. If we're so lucky. We'll probably circle back sometime next week, wrap up. Let's shoot for in between the conference finals and the cup finals so we can have a nice juicy cup preview.
Yeah.
So this is it's been a good show. Thanks, Patrick Clark, for hopping on. And we'll get two game sevens to wrap up next week on the next edition of the Canes Periodical Podcast.
Periodical.